Hey everyone, welcome back to Blessed Child Podcast with your host Renee. This is going to be part two of labor trafficking in Vegas with Aftab. Now, we are addressing a system of human trafficking in the Unification Church. And I just want to relieve you of the pressure that you might feel to take up arms and save the victims. Yes, that would be great, but really, you know, saving the victims is putting a Band-Aid on a hemorrhaging wound. Saving one victim creates shelf space. And what that means is the trafficker is just going to recruit and find another victim. And under the guise of religious practices, I mean, it's almost protected by the law. The Unification Church has been running legal human trafficking rings for decades because they call it missionary work and witnessing, when really it's recruiting for labor demands. So, you know, we can't really save all the victims. What we can do as survivors of the Unification Church ourselves is create language, make it visible. Make it visible for who? For the general public, but also for the intelligence analysis, for the legal system, to actually lay their eyes on what is going on in the Unification Church. That is what we are doing on this episode today. Human trafficking is everywhere. It's almost human to be stuck in a cycle of oppressor and oppressive. It's almost human to be stuck in the cycle of violence. But then you have to remember that we are also animals, and maybe what's human about us is something we're still striving for. We're still evolving to be human, because when you become the oppressed or you are the oppressor, you are dehumanizing yourself and others. And that is the lowest road to get your labor demands met by someone, sexual or any type of labor demands, by oppressing them is inhuman. And what we're trying to do is restore our humanity or evolve towards a more humane society. And that's a place where there's autonomy and responsibility and people are not trafficked. So we're going to start this episode off with Aftab reflecting on her years of being harbored and her family being trafficked. But she was out and she was free. And then she saw one of her traffickers at an anime expo. Here we go.
The reason I've been like, contact you recently because I like actually saw him recently and I haven't seen him for years, and I went to this expo for anime and he was there doing their little project. They've been making like a game project, so I'll talk about that later, but he was there. I was like, oh, I thought he was dead by now.
Okay.
So it kind of riled up my emotions and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. They still live here in Vegas. I was kind of like that. So
You have to tell me. You have to say the name, and we can bleep it out if it's
okay. Okay, no, it's up to you. His name is Mr. Fujita. He's Japanese, and I don't know too much of his background, but he was just a much older missionary guy, and he was first just like on the side. He wasn't like a big deal, but at some point, he just became like going up, and everyone started praising him. At some point, I even cried in front of him saying, I'm so sorry, my parents are not doing good. And I was like feeling bad. I was like, there was a day in a workshop, they're like, do you have anything to say to Mr. Fujita? He wants you guys to like, you want to say something you're grateful for or whatever, like that kind of stuff. And he's literally sitting there. And I'm like, I went up trying to be brave because I felt so guilty. My parents weren't doing their best. So that was like a weird experience. But I felt good that it was over, that I knew what I was feeling at that time, at least. I feel like I'm pretty brave when it comes to those things. Like when it comes to like when I feel guilt, I cannot hold it. Like I always, and that's why I kind of end up staying in the church too, though, because they want to hear your guilt, right? But I did that. this guy, he's trying to make his own little world. Like he made this production. He wanted to gather all the kids there that were talented in a sense with arts and computer graphics and drawing, and so we can make their own like unification films almost, you know. So that's still their goal, they're still trying to do that. They're still trying to make games and, you know, projects without barely paying anyone who's working there. I know some people right now who are there. My friend also who liked the books, she's in there now. I was almost going to be in there too because they like, I like to draw. So I was like, they really wanted me to be part of that. And thankfully, I learned a lot of graphic stuff from them. But because the person there, he was in art school before. That's why he kind of ended up teaching us. But definitely, some of the secondaries were going to end up there to be like working for them in a different way, not just fundraising. Movie graphics, or like they just had like little side jobs, just kind of like that, definitely. But I was really like hopeful at that time. I was like, I want to do this art stuff. I really want to like make God proud. And if I make this stuff, I was really into it. I was like, that's why I got into Photoshop and learning like everything, like trying to learn these things and story making. Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're told, right? I remember being taught Photoshop in Mooney School, and it was like, yeah, for God, oh, really? For Reverend Mood.
Exactly.
It's such a small worldview. And I'm so impressed that you got out because like you had such a narrow window.
It was really narrow. It was definitely like this group mentality. We do something for the group. And we literally felt like we loved each other because we were almost like always together. Literally living like apartments away and we talk to each other. But eventually, so when the whole Vegas thing, they were like, let's move to Vegas, everybody. Like, it was kind of like that. Like, and Mr. Fuchida, he came here. He's like, let's move here. The apartments and houses are cheaper. Like, they were just like all these like trying to convince everybody, right? We need to get closer to them.
I remember Moon saying, yeah, everybody, let's make a church center in Vegas, the center of the universe.
I think we were the only group that actually took it literally and everyone like started moving here. And a few people did stay back, but most of us came here.
My parents bought land in Reno but we never ended up moving to Vegas or Nevada, but we did buy property.
Wow.
They sold it. But like, remember going out there and be like, what the fuck? And my dad's like, yeah, we own this desert. We own the water rights. We got the water rights. And I'm like, what the fuck does that mean?
But Reno, that's weird. Not Vegas. Maybe
no,
it's cheaper there.
Yeah. I don't know what they were thinking. I think there was like, but like we took it seriously too.
Consider like a whole separate place from here. So
yeah. Sorry. Well, we took it seriously too. Not as seriously, but continue.
But yeah. So my mom was asked, do you guys want to come to Vegas? Like they were still asked, you know? And I was like, she asked us, me and my sister, like, do you guys want to go? And my brother was still young that time. And he's like, I'm like, yeah. And I wanted to go back because my crush was going there. So I was like, obviously, like, yeah, I'm going to go if my crush is there, my friends are going there. So I was kind of convinced with that. I was like, nah. And this crush, I had a crush on him since the beginning I met him till high school and over, like the same crush. And now he's married with a kid, but like he's in the church still. Like he's like the most extreme member right now. Like he's, oh my God, I'm like feeling like, oh, why did you went to that direction? But I always had this, like, when I had a crush, I always had this like feeling of, if I'm just like friends with him enough and be a good person, his parents like me, I might be with him. It was like always like hoping I'll be matched with him. That's my way of like going through my puberty and like my young love thing. Like I was always like hoping one day. So I was very committed to him. And that was kind of weird because I was like, huh, that wasn't as, you know, healthy. Over time, I'm learning as like, it's okay to have a crush, but it wasn't okay to express it or have any, like, you can't show any like evidence almost like. So, but there are times I would almost like, hey, let's go hang out, do tennis. And he's like, why? Like, right? Oh. Like, why me? He's like that. And I think genuinely he didn't care about girls at that point. So it's just kind of like, but eventually I said, okay. And then he told his parents, and his parents are almost like, why? So I was like, And they say, okay, but maybe his sisters can come with you. And I was like, okay, that's fine. But then the next day they're like, no, we can't do this. Now, okay. Like, I'm like so devastated. And I was crying in the closet. I was like telling my mom, like, I did a bad thing. That's what it felt like. I was like, I shouldn't talk to boys. Like, I shouldn't. Because I've been told that ever since I was young from my dad, like literally going to a McDonald's playground, my dad's like, don't touch that boy. Don't touch that boy. So, you know how Muslim culture is very separate with men and women. So my dad was even more extreme with that. Like, oh, how I dress, how I, you know, interact with guys. It was very like, they're going to rape you. That's the whole thing about it. Like, he's like, I'm like, okay, that's weird. But that's becoming me more obsessed with guys. I'll be honest. I was just kind of like, I'm more curious in a sense. So yeah, I had that crush for a long time, thinking that if I'm loyal with this crush, it's going to get me somewhere. Because I thought I'm still doing God's word, being loyal. That's what I thought.
Right. So. Right. There's this strange, like, you have, like, well, we pledge our virginity to God. We pledge our love and faith to God. But God's, you know, not real. So then we fixate on a person, not saying he's not real, but in our 13-year-old heads, you know, your abstract thinking of God is like, oh, well, maybe it's this boy that I like. I'll be faithful and pledge all of my love to him. And my, I feel like I did the same in some weird ways. And I think that happens a lot when you're not allowed to express yourself. They find weird, toxic ways of either like festering inside of you and like tearing you up, or you find these ways that are like loopholes.
Yeah,
to still be like considered faithful and good.
That's definitely, I feel like more I got in, like kind of leaving the church time, I was like, definitely everybody had this feeling and they hide it really good. And I know everybody went to these workshops and camping because they liked somebody. Like, I was just realizing that later on.
Oh,
like,
yeah. I went to a same thing. I think a lot of people in the church do that. Like, that we go over the top to like fundraise or witness or just be the best leader to impress someone that we want to get like married to. It's so weird. It's so toxic.
That's when I realized love, like our, like not love, but like this lust thing, like this kind of crush feeling you get as a human being, that it's so strong, even when they tell you don't even think about this stuff, it doesn't, like our brain is just wired to it. So I think we find like excuse in our brain to be like, ah, it's not that bad, like we're trying to, he's my brother and we're just being friends, like we're trying our best to think of a thing to avoid getting caught. But definitely I was trying to find loopholes just by like, okay, we're gonna do stretching. We stretch together. Okay, like just little things I can do, and I got kind of obsessed.
Do you want to read DP with me?
Sure.
Oh, just kidding.
Where we like, I want to share a book. You want to do like, I can think of the littlest things, like birthdays, and I remember those first feelings.
Yeah, that's love, right? It's powerful. It's elemental.
It is.
You can't deny it. You can't control it.
And I felt he was actually willing to be friends too, but just definitely the church pushed you to be like, no way, don't do that. Like he quickly like, I can't, sorry, can't, no.
There's so many expressions of love that you don't get to experience. It's not the extremes of marriage or no feelings at all. Like there's all the feelings in between and all the life experiences in between of getting to know somebody. Those are the things.
This is where I'm trying to like kind of develop myself again, as in how to be friends with guys platonically. Like I'm always having still difficult time at work. Like just they're guys. It's not me, I'm tempting them or anything. Like they're just, even if they were tempted, like I could say no.
That's
like,
that's not your responsibility. Like that's exactly their, that's like, their own responsibility.
I can say no. I can say I'm not interested. I can say whatever, but I, for the longest time, felt like I should not show any like flirty expression or be nice even, because if I do, they're going to misunderstand and they might like attack me or something. It's like this fear I had for the longest time, but I'm like learning how to be friends with guys just because they're friends. Like it's a new challenge for me, definitely.
Well, I think you worded that really, really well, that you're addressing all that conditioning that you've been through in this really narrow life experience of the school and growing up with your two parents and the cultural differences.
I guess I'll continue how I got out the church.
Sure.
So eventually going to Vegas is where I kind of started to actually get into a public school, because we're going to continue the online school, but I actually literally told my mom, like, I don't want to do it anymore. I'm so tired of staying in the house and on the computer. Like, literally, I was like that. And she said, oh, I know a school that you will love. They focus on arts. It's a magnet school. And one of the spiritual parents' daughter went to. So we're kind of like signed up for that. They literally have like an audition. So by then, I actually been doing art classes and saving up a lot of portfolio in a sense without realizing. So even though it's like halfway through junior year, I was like, was able to get in. And I was like, so happy. Like they said, well, how did you get in? You're not even a freshman. Usually you have to get through freshman. But I was able to get in because I had all A's too in all my online classes. So I think that helped too. So I was really happy when I got in.
You were 10 when you started your formal education and you got into a magnet school at 16.
Yeah.
So with 6 years of formal education ish, not really, I wouldn't call it formal, accredited, maybe, that's kind of sus, and a PBS background, you got into a magnet school.
Exactly. That's and incredible. I realized most people don't really study that hard though, even in the magnet school. I realized how much people are not that, like, they just try to pass just barely. So for me, I was like, I gotta have A's. I was like this Asian side of me. I was just like, I need to have A's as I'm not gonna succeed, right? But I also enjoyed studying too. So going into that school made me like, I was still part of the church, definitely, but I was like opening up to understanding the outside people in a sense. So realizing they're actually really nice people, and I enjoyed it so much. But this school is known for having a lot of LGBTQ, because it's an art school. There's so many theater kids, art students. I've seen so many couples, same-sex couples. I was like, I heard about homosexuality before, and I knew it was not a good thing, but it wasn't too much in depth, you know, like not too much, because I haven't like met anybody like that. But definitely I was like, at that time my sister went to a different school, and she also made a friend with someone who was bisexual, and my dad was very angry about that. I forgot to tell you, my parents actually had a divorce. I forgot about that. So when we moved to Vegas, right before we moved to Vegas, they divorced, because my dad, even though he didn't say upfront and I didn't understand at first, but he was already deciding to remarry. Like he was like saying, this is not working, our marriage. He was basically like that. So everybody thought it was my mom's idea, but really it was his idea, because he thought my mom was just not the person for him, because I just think they weren't a match anyways to begin with. But that's still like, he put too much blame on her, strange enough, because she's kind of less emotional of a person. They're saying, you're not as feminine, or you're not as this, like there's all these little things that he wanted a woman to be, but he also lacked a lot as a man, so it just didn't work. So that's his own story. It's almost like my parents were in a very toxic relationship. They definitely would be considered a kind of traffic marriage situation, where they just don't know what to do anymore. My mom felt threatened many times when he kind of got crazy. He has like a mental state, almost like a bipolar, but kind of like he will one day be like nice to people, but the next moment he's like, I'm gonna kill you. Like he's almost like threatened her when she wanted to go back to Japan and stuff. That's his own thing.
All of these, they sound so like on par with cult personalities.
Yeah. People who join are not grown up in a sense. Many of them were really like struggling and couldn't grow up, and then they learned something that was more destructive, you could say. That's how I felt with my parents. And when I see other people's parents in church, I'm almost still curious, like they still seem a little better than my parents. My parents are really like not fit, and it was very frustrating. But yeah, the last straw that my mom had was that when she heard that he wanted to remarry, and literally he wanted to take us away and leave her, you know, alone in a sense. Like, she wanted to take the custody of the children, us kids. And she was like, no way, you didn't do anything. You didn't even help us. Like, no way. And that's, we are hit our pride and joy with whatever she had left. Her parents already cut off ties with her and everything. Like, she has nobody at that point. So yeah, definitely she practically ran away. Like, she practically left the key in the apartment. We all packed our bags. We went to someone else's house, and that was it. And she was filing for divorce, and it took a while for him to finally sign in and everything and tell the, you know, court. But yeah, that was really traumatic for sure, because for me, I knew they weren't getting along, but everybody saw it as a big thing, took it so hard, and members, you know, not in favor of it, and they still don't until this day. Like, my dad remarried now, but it's like, literally, I got a phone call saying, are your parents still divorced? I was like, yes. Like, I got an anonymous call, and this person is actually the mom of my crush. And I was like, oh yeah, they divorced a long time ago. And I was just being kind to her, but I was just like, somehow they like to, I heard my mom, so they like to keep records all the time, checking up on members all the time. So they don't really care, of course. They just want to know what's their numbers, you know? So it's pretty, like, being divorced and having divorced parents in church is really also another way of putting us in a lower level, you could say, like, looked down upon or looked sorry, like, I'm sorry for you kind of feeling. But in my head, it's like, no, it was the best thing ever. Like, I needed them to separate.
Yeah, it was so bad. Please, like, don't feel pity for me, or mm-hmm. if it's the best thing. It's so toxic.
If they were still married to this day, I don't know where I would have been in my life. I'll be honest. I don't even think I've left by now, or I would have left in a very bad way. So thankfully not.
Yeah, it was a good thing. Yeah. Reverend Moon does it again. Awful marriage choices. He did that. Yeah. How can he so carelessly just, one picture and a picture and decide somebody's entire life?
Exactly.
That's ridiculous.
Exactly. It doesn't make sense at all. And even, at least, even if, I know there's like blind marriages out there, but like, they're still getting to know each other somehow in the beginning. But this is literally like, you're already committed.
Yeah.
Day one.
One.
But there's like all these reality shows now that are doing that. Like,
but they don't they don't put the fear of Jesus Christ in you if you break it.
No.
It's not like the you'll kill the Messiah if you like defy it. But
yeah,
there's so many things. Your life story is like, I've never even heard of this sect. Huntington School.
Yeah.
Vegas. And,
strangely, like, the Los Angeles Unification Church was very like, didn't like that church in that church, because they're like, ooh, they're like not really listening the right way, like, you know, they were just kind of, then I was like, oh, they're not, like, I was confused as a kid. I was like, well, we're not all the same. That's how I felt. So yeah, definitely there was that kind of weird separation that I didn't realize. Just to mention real quick, the Mr. Fushida guy is he was kind of like supporting Hyojin, the oldest son. We had literally pictures of him in the house too. Like, he was just like, they were like literally like worshiping him too until he died, and they're worshiping somebody else and the other true child. So this is how they got their money, in a sense, like almost like this support, literally like know each other, like getting, you know, help from. So I think that's how it kind of kept going. You could say they had enough support. So
Hyojin was the rock star, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're literally listening to his music at times, because we're like, oh, let's listen to his songs. Like, he's so amazing. Like, it was like that kind of stuff. I was like, what? He sounds crazy. He sounds like he's, you know, then I learned about the drugs and stuff, and I'm just like, why are we supporting this person? And then I learned more about him, like, he's terrible.
Oh, like, Oh, this is the guy Nansa Kong was married to.
Yeah.
The 15-year-old child bride.
Yeah.
Yeah, not cool.
They were literally saying he was an amazing person. But I'm like, how is he amazing? Like, after I got older, I learned. But yeah, there was that kind of connection. I'll just go with quickly how, like, how I kind of end up leaving the church, you could say.
Sure.
Which is like almost 5 years, 6 years now. 2017, 16. So the reason I left the church is because it was getting closer to me thinking, like, am I going to marry somebody? Like, what am I? What is the situation? Everyone's trying to find some matching. And at that point, I gave up on my crush, I'll be honest. Like, I was like, it's not going to work out. And then I started meeting a lot of people at the Carp Center, if you know the Carp Center in Vegas. And I started finding a lot of cute guys. I was like, oh, I like these people. Like, I was just kind of like, it just kind of naturally happened, I felt. And starting to even get, like, hit on a lot from the guests that were coming in. I was just, like, bombarded by this, like, oh, there's, like, guys talking to me here and there. Like, I was, like, never had that experience from then. I felt like I was not even that cute or pretty. But then at some point, it just, like, all came. And then I was like, oh no, what am I gonna do? I was like, kind of like telling the youth pastor, like, they're like talking to me. I don't like it. I was like, but he's like, no, it's your responsibility to know what to do in that situation. I was like, oh, okay. But I was just kind of like getting this kind of mixed message. And then, so yeah, so I had a crush on this one boy and I thought he was a second gen, like a Japanese boy. But then I find out later he wasn't, that he was a new member that joined in Japan, and that broke my heart so much. I was like looking for everything in the textbook, like, am I able to marry somebody who's first gen and second gen? I was like so into him. Literally, it's only been 2 months I've met him. And then and that same exactly same time, I met another guy who started to talk to me a lot, and he was a second gen, and somehow I did this good comparison between the two. And the person who was second gen, it was, I felt like he's so like arrogant and so like just doing things. And he would talk to me in Japanese. And what I learned as a multilingual person is that Japanese members really didn't like what they were doing. Like all the church members be like, oh, Japanese members doing good job, doing the fundraising, right? But when I actually hear them talk, many of them are like, they didn't want to do this. And many of them are like, literally, because my parents pushed me, because I just want to travel. I just want to do something else. Like, they're literally like, they're not here to really do anything. They're just trying to get away from home. And I learned that, wow. So they're not really as great as people are saying, in a sense. Like, I'm learning more and more. You know, they're people.
Nobody wants to work for free. Nobody wants to work for free. Like, let's just put it out there.
No, but they had to push themselves so much. I saw them, like, literally, they have to do the most fundraising every single time. They're saying because they're willing to do it, and you guys are lazy, or like in the people in the crowd, like, they're like, they're so willing to do it, but how you guys need to learn from them, like that kind of stuff, you know? And they would do this every few years as the Vegas church got bigger and bigger. So, anyway, just to go with the how I got out is, as I had the crush, he went back to Japan. We had one time to talk, but I just realized this is not gonna work. Looks like he doesn't want to talk to me. And at that point, I was like, "What am I gonna do? Do I continue liking this guy or stuff like that?" You know, I felt guilty. I felt so guilty that I liked this guy. Nobody knew it. Everybody was like, didn't know about this, and I felt like this guilt. So. There was this workshop that was coming up, and it's the, you know, the purity workshop. Like, it's like a, what do you call it? You get the little ring, you know, like.
Hilshim. Yeah.
And this is my first time going to this. So I decided to go to it thinking that I need to like restart my life because I had this crush. I need to like start over in a sense. And at some point in the workshop, I just realized, wow, this is intense. All the new guests are learning all these things. They're like, well, we have to do this and this and this to get married. Like, they're like starting to get like, whoa. But they were still trying to be like, no, don't worry. It's going to be fun. Like, they're trying to like convince you. So even for me, who've been in the church for so long, I was like, oh, this is kind of weird. Why are we talking about this? It was just kind of, I'm sure you know, but just since the time, I'm just going to say, eventually I had to do the, you know, confession later. And it was so uncomfortable, so uncomfortable. I was like thinking of all the sexual things I can think of that I've done. Like, it's just like, oh, I like this person. I have masturbated. I have like all these little things. I was like starting to put the crush in everything. And that, or any anger I had towards anybody. So this thing, like, I even called my dad, should I do this? He's like, what do you think? You got to talk to God. I'm like, I was like,
not talking to God. It's writing it down, making blackmail. Like,
exactly.
It's not talking to God.
And as soon as I finished it, handed it to them, and I saw some people didn't do it. And I was like, oh, there was a choice not to do it. I was a little bit like,
red flags yes. everywhere.
The people who didn't do it were like the people that didn't come to church often. I can tell maybe they weren't really interested in the first place. So, but yeah, I was very loyal in this kind of stuff. I was always trying to do the best I can. And after I came home, I told my mom, well, in a few days, they're going to tell me to go to this ring ceremony. They've measured our ring or finger already. And she's like, no, don't go. That is like witchcraft. She's like that. She's like, at that point, she was already leaving the church. I know we don't have time to go with this, but while I was still in the church, she was actually leaving the church at some point. And she was the one trying to convince me to get out. And even my sister. So it was me, just me left. And my dad was already, you know, not part of marriage. So he was just separate. But me, I was so like still in the church. So she was convincing me, don't go to the ceremony. Don't go this Sunday. You don't need to go. Here's some articles. This is where I found those articles. Like, and then I start reading them. And I was like, oh, this actually makes sense. This doesn't, I don't, this is like actually opened my mind suddenly. Like, and but she had been telling me these things all this time, but then somehow until then it actually took seriously, because it was kind of like on the line. It was like important in my life, thinking about marriage. So I was like, I don't want to mess this up. So that really, like, that was the last day I ever went to church, basically. Like, since then I never came back. They never contacted me. And that's what that shocked me even more, is like, wow, they don't even care. Like, I existed.
What did you write on that form? I'm just kidding. That's
no, I was so, I was trying to get that back, actually. Like, I was trying to get it back. But at that point, it was too late. And my mom said maybe they photocopies it and everything. Like, she was just like,
they told me it goes straight to headquarters. I have no idea.
They said
idea.
They were going to burn it. They said going to burn it. I'm like, how would I know?
That is sick. I'm right. So glad you got out of that. That's amazing that your mom could help you.
She was very upset how they keep putting Japanese members down. And she learned about the whole, like, you know, the war between Japan and Korea. So she was just learning her history more. She still kind of have a weird concept about the world still. She's still kind of spiritual. But when it came to, like, Moonies Church, she was just like, they're just not nice Japanese people. I don't want to be part of this anymore. So she kind of got that kind of way to get out and then help me. And that time I realized my sister was out too. I didn't even, in a sense, I didn't realize it, because in my head it's just, they're kind of astray. You know what I mean? When you're in the church, you feel like, oh, they're just a little bit astray. But really she was already convinced and she just doesn't want to hurt my feelings. You know, like, I was like, oh, okay. I didn't realize that. And I'm just glad I finally got out. Like, it took me a while, but I'm so happy I got out. So it was kind of like that.
You're like unlocking a whole new level of.
I would love to talk more about a lot of things. Yeah, pretty much that's how I left. And within the next year, I started dating. So that's why I have my boyfriend now. But like, that really changed my concept of love for sure. Like, I think I was so really wanting to find what love was, that that's how I got out of church in a sense, because I really didn't like how my parents got married. So that's kind of like the biggest factor. Yeah. So anyway,
time. I think that's a really good way to end, is what is love? That's the search, right? That's mankind's struggle, and in such a loveless place with the arranged marriages and the isolated world of how you grew up. I mean, the search for love. It was a long and treacherous journey. And I'm glad that you can finally experience it within the spectrum, yeah, not just the extremes.
Exactly. I think that was, yeah, that is like the way that I was pretty much, that was all I was looking for. And of course, it's still a journey now, but yeah. So yeah, that's all. But I'm just so happy so many platforms are opening, because when I left, there was barely anything. Yeah. The only articles. There was no like you guys, like a second gen who came out the church to talk about it, barely.
Right. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good part for me to drop. Some Behind the Bastards is a podcast that just released. Did you see that release? They did a huge segment on the Moonies. The Moonies are so much worse than, you know. Yeah. They did a huge segment on like the fascism and the imperialism and the death squads Reverend Moon had, wow, and the Contra. And it was so in depth. Everybody should go listen to that. And then you've got Falling Out that's coming back for its next season. Mm-hmm. Then you've got Jen Kiaba's Lessons on Leaving. And then you've got Kathleen Bell with her creativity. And there's just so many second gen coming out with resources, right? Not second gen, but second gen cult survivors, adult.
Yes.
Exactly. You know, survivors of cultic abuse coming out with a lot of platforms, and
exactly,
it's awesome. Exactly. So yeah, I'm sure if you want to plug in your information, I'm sure any of these people listening would love to like talk with you more. I would love to have a second chat with you as well.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm offed up. I'm not that public, but definitely if you wanted to message me, I'm at Afchan Shining on Instagram. And I have an art page too, Afchan Arts, wherever you can find me. I don't mind getting a message.
Hey everyone. So I am doing this for the first time, but I'm dropping some bonus content. Me and Off-Top got back together after a few days and did another little interview for some questions that I had to follow up, because I was kind of shell-shocked from everything that I learned about her life experience in the Unification Church the first time we met. So here is a bonus episode. Here we go. We had a few days for the podcast to digest that episode that I dropped with you. And but before I get to my questions, is there anything you wanted to add to that first part that you feel like we didn't have a chance to really talk about?
Okay. So I remember leaving where I started dating, getting to know my boyfriend. I think that time I just wanted to explain how, even though I think I sounded very casual when I said it, but it was a really big part of my life that totally turned everything around. And that's where I became very angry towards the church. And definitely became very obsessed in finding information about like the atheist community, or finding out information of the church, and just trying to get my life back, like going to doctor appointments, going, like even my family was anti-vaccine, like all these things were like, felt like I had to restart my life. And only just now that I feel like I'm going in a direction, like a new chapter, I did want to talk about the job that I had previously. Is that something I can add right now? Is okay?
Absolutely.
I talked about how I had to support my family. Mm-hmm. And so my mom, she was a cook, right? She was working for that group. And one day they decided to just mail us a note saying, you know, you're not part of this anymore, because we feel like we will be fine on our own. Some, even though she'd been working for them for years and cooking for at least 20, 40 people, she will have some help, but she literally, you know, has back problems and her arms are like, you know, she did have like body problems after that, and she had no money to go doctor or anything. And she doesn't, it's really, as time goes by, I realize how much she really had to work hard. But yeah, they just dropped the letter saying she's not part of us because she wouldn't join their meetings. They have a meeting every week or month, and she doesn't want to join them because she said every time she goes to them, it's bullshit and always about things that doesn't really matter. And she felt like, but if when she doesn't go to them, they really feel like, oh, she's not really part of the group. It's a very like group mentality to this. Awesome. And even though so my mom is very like a straightforward person. She gossips, but she hates the gossip that don't make any progress in a sense, almost. Like she hates the ones that really doesn't help people. And they had enough gossip about her, very ridiculous stuff that, you know, it's not need to be in detail, but it's pretty much anything they can find, anything. Just even if we seemed like we had more like opportunities or money, they would be like, oh, where are you getting that money from? Or how you're able to afford to go to, like for me, art class. Or like, they're always trying to figure out where you're getting this special privilege. Did you get it from, you know, our group leader? Like, did you, where? So this made, they finally kind of like, didn't want us to be there at some point. So in a sense, that was their way of saying, hey, bye-bye. Like, you know, we're good, without saying why, you know? So
this is I went for a spiral once our episode ended into identifying what human trafficking was. And yeah, this sounds like that. What was the group's name?
They didn't call it anything at the time. We always just called it Mr. Fujita Group. Like, you know,
oh, okay.
But now that you mentioned and found that article, I was like, yeah, that's right. They did call themselves NFL, whatever.
New Hope.
Like New Hope Foundation.
New Hope Foundation International, and as well
they
as
actually. They actually made a like an actual business with that name, so that my mom technically, oh yeah, pay taxes. And this is another messed up thing that why my mom decided I don't want to work here anymore, because even though they fired her, but technically she realized every time they had to do tax returns, everybody in the group, the money goes towards them. They don't get that tax return. So all these years, my mom's like, wait a minute. Oh, tax returns meant for me? Like, she didn't even know that.
Oh, my God.
That's when we found out, like, we could have had more money in our situation. So that just made her like, yeah, I don't care. I don't want to go back to your group. You guys teach me the wrong things, how life goes. Basically, because she's not an American citizen. She didn't understand all these things. So we start learning these things actually from other church members that are more westernized. They're like, no, of course you get money for yourself. What are you talking about? So that kind of stuff was a big drama, you could say. And that's where, however, I still stuck with this group because I was 18 at the time and I just finished high school and I started college, community college for one semester later on. But since she had lost her job, I had to find a job in a sense. And I had no clue what to do in that situation. I don't even know the world out there. So they said, hey, we are making a daycare and you can work for it. And this is, you know, I've talked about it with you personally, that this daycare was made kind of like an extension from the other school. They're saying, this time, let's actually make like a public kind of school for our kids, but also other kids, hoping that this could be something that will multiply over time. So I started working there. And I've stuck with it for now. It's been like 7 years. Like, I just quit last year. It was owned by that group, by specifically this one lady, Hispanic lady, and she was the director. But they were really trying to make the same thing they did in Los Angeles here and with babies. And I just accepted to work there with very low pay in the beginning. But I learned daycares are kind of like that. But eventually they sold the place because they couldn't afford it. And I stuck with another, just a different person, not from the church. But it was getting worse and worse. And this is where I want to explain like how when the church teach you to be like a certain character, you could say, like always helping and caring about the community. This is where I felt like I couldn't ever quit this job because I felt so loyal to it. I felt like I had to do the best I can, even if it's like not that great. And only until last year that it got so bad that my boyfriend told me to quit that I finally quit. Even then, I wasn't willing to quit because I felt like I had to, like, do the best I can and make the money I can. But yeah, that was just my good run of it, because a lot of things happened. So many things happened. When I started dating, I was still part of that job in a sense. When I was already leaving the church, I was still like part of the group, you could say. I was still seeing people from the church. And I had so much like anxiety every single day. Are they gonna know I have a boyfriend? Like this feeling. And I felt like somebody might see me in the streets. Even my dad, like he lived near me. I was like, somebody's gonna see me. So I had this very bad anxiety. But I don't know when was it, but there was a day I finally, in a sense, kind of had to expose it, but no one cared. Like, it was really like funny because I showed it to my doctor. Yeah, I am dating somebody. I had to kind of, I don't know how it went, but she said, oh, that's cool. And then she thought I was going to bring him into the church. Like he said, are you going to start teaching him? I was thinking like, huh, I thought being with someone out the church was a bad thing. But in her head, it's like, that is an option too. And I didn't know that was the option. But I did realize, this is where I don't need to worry so much actually too. Like no one really care in a sense. And this is where like I can relax. I can finally like leave the church. But for the longest time, I've been taught like this. I still feel this at times, like somebody's going to chase me down. It's so weird. Yeah. That was really, really most stressful I've ever had. Wow. And almost had to like get help for that because I was getting, yeah, a little bit suicidal at that point. But my boyfriend was definitely my hope, you could say, like to work on myself. Yeah.
So he acted as a support system. You know, I felt like I knew the Unification Church story, but when I first talked to you, I was taken aback because the amount of isolation and control that you have endured and have been conditioned to was very shocking for me. An example is that you were born in America and you have a Japanese accent. Like that's how isolated you were in this community. I understand the conditioning of enduring suffering in the Unification Church from my own lens, but for you, you were in like a higher, like the level of demand that you were in, like the isolation and the control group that you were in was on a whole different scale. So I understand that anxiety coming out of that, trying to like find your autonomy and express yourself and your freedom was very taxing for you emotionally. And I think you worded it really great. And it sounds wonderful that you had a boyfriend that could be a support system, as well as kind of like slowly get out of this system instead of like a big shock and just like ripping yourself away from it is what exactly. I get. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, exactly. It took time for me to like, you know, you don't know what you don't know. So I had to find things out over time. I'm still dealing with it. I remember listening to some kind of video on YouTube saying, this is going to be a never-ending journey, and that's okay. But there was a time I felt like I need to know all the answers. It felt like that. I was like, just like when they teach you the divine person, I feel like I had the answers, but now I have no answers. But then maybe that's not how the world works. It feels like being ripped out from this like processing that I needed to have as a young person, but I have to have it now. And now I'm 28. So if I feel like I'm in a teenage phase now. It's like, I have to learn how people deal with love, how people deal with society, how people deal with death. All these things is like very new for me. And right. It's frustrating when I have to like explain that at times. But at the same time, I see it as my journey and my own journey. And it's kind of interesting too. So I feel like I act very young. For my age, I like to like discover and learn new things. But yeah, my boyfriend, he is an atheist. So he's not very like demanding person. He was able to question me with little things like, do you really believe in ghosts? What do you really think about that? Do you really think that's true? Like, so I started like questioning it. I was like, you're right. I don't know. Let me think about it. So definitely he helped me turn 180 in a good way, because he was very patient with that, and almost thought, if I thought that will shoo him away, because there'll be plenty of people out there that is not have this situation, but that's not what he cared about. He said he really liked how I was able to be very honest and kind, I guess, is something he was appreciative. I know that's part of just kind of how I grew up, but he said a lot of people tend to lie or tend to, like, you know, not be honest with themselves. So that's why he likes me. Have you seen his photos? I don't know, but he's Japanese.
So cute. Yes. Of course, I stalked you after our story. I was like, who is this chick? I need to know everything.
And I think people who are not faithful in the church might misunderstand that he is a member, but he's not. He's totally not a member. But
so sly.
I just happened to find a Japanese person because it just worked for me. And yeah. From his side, he actually almost got recruited to CARP too. Like, he's in the university I'm going now, and they always come to the university, the CARP group, right? And I've been with every, like, week we'll do like a little meeting, and he said he have been like asked questions, but my boyfriend, thankfully, his parents are very questioning a lot of things, so he already will have that kind of critical mind that this is kind of suspicious. And he was also very busy, but definitely if you're more vulnerable on your own, you don't have family around you, it's so easy to get into it. And I've met many, even high school friends got into it that I knew. It's so weird. Like, I try to, like, almost want to warn them now, but it's really hard to do it because I feel like I'm breaking, like, this cloud. Like, this, I don't want to make the bad news, but sometimes there's moments like that I really want to let people know. It's okay if I go back all the way to the daycare.
Yeah, so let's go.
Yeah, the daycare thing is practically made by that group, thinking that they could create a kind of like their own little society. But the fact they just put too much money into it that they didn't really know how to, you know, work with it, and they lost it. But while being there, definitely had interesting moments, you could say. All those people from the group, their kids went there. I took care of their kids. I've had moments where I had to deal with their situation. It's a weird, like, dynamic. It's not like of just being a boss and employee. I felt like I had to be like a good example, I guess, while being with them, because I'm considered like the elder, second gen, and they need support with that. But at that time is when my parents was divorced. I was very, like, unhappy, and they would be telling me, like, you need to smile. And I was like, I didn't feel like it, but over time I guess I kind of faked it. But this is the moment where I kind of had a good way of learning about this church, because since they're taking in other kids from the outside world, you could say, I start comparing the two, like the kids from the church, kids are not from the church. And what I notice is they're not any different, but also the ones that are in the church actually act way more spoiled. And so, like, because their parents are there, or their parents don't give them certain different kind of consequence, like, it's hard to explain. But I had been told, one, like, missionary asked me, hey, is the second gen, like, are they any different, are they more like nice, or what? Like, they were trying to make me sound like, are they like angels, basically. And I said, no, not really. I was very honest. I was like, no, they're actually worse at times, because they know they have privilege. And this is where this whole, like, I felt like being in this group felt like we had like another blood, you know, like we're a part of royalty. And this is where I felt like I have this like arrogance too. And over time, it took a while for me to let it go. Like, when I learned what's the word ego, how do I get rid of this ego and know that I'm just one of the people in this world? It's not that I'm special. And that's toxic. And lots of people who weren't second gen asked me this question. How does it feel to be second gen? And I'm like, there is nothing different. It is absolutely actually even more pressure and more depressing at times, because it's just too much going on. So, yeah.
I think psychologically speaking, you just perfectly described the us versus them cult mentality to make people feel separate and special so that you can, you know, coerce them a little bit better. It's easier. Yeah. It's easier to lure people in with a fantasy than punish them.
Exactly.
I'm going to leave Mr. Fujita's name in after you told me that he kept your mom's taxes, because that is like point blank human trafficking. And what I looked into was that your mom's situation and your dad's situation would be called debt bondage, where the trafficker has access and controls all the transportation, home, food, all these basic needs to get labor demands met by your parents. It was kind of like, I'm not sure if he had a hand in it, but when you said that he collected your mom's taxes, that's the nail in the coffin. There's no defending that.
Maybe other members too. Yeah.
There is. Yeah.
That's why we thought, oh, wait, that's how you get a lot of money in one moment. Sometimes he's able to travel to Japan and then all these things. So they would get all these cars and vans and, I don't know. It's just, we're like, where did this come from? But at least when I started working, I learned taxes are for me. I started getting taxes is when I started getting more money. But it was just as soon as I was 18, I had to grow up fast, you could say. I had to like figure it out. My sister included.
You had to. And, you know, I think a lot of us are relearning. And you started school when you were 10. Like, I know you're a quick learner, but what the other terms for your parents would be involuntary servitude, which is like when you're stuck in the cycle where the trafficker, you know, controls all your basic needs. And then there's peonage. And it sounds like you yourself were harbored through isolation and confinement and monitoring. So like, these are all technical terms, but then there's a psychological factor. And I think you're describing like reintegrating into society after surviving human trafficking to an extreme extent. Mm. Basically, I was just painting the legal terms, which would be like your mom was harbored. She was isolated. You were confined and you were monitored. Your spending was monitored. If you took a class, that was scrutinized. Those are all actions of a trafficker, somebody that wants to maintain control, or a narcissist. And also once they found out they couldn't control you or your family, they let you go because you're a danger at some point.
Exactly.
Hey, I just wanted to add in sex trafficking, there's a term called aging out. And that's when a trafficked victim then perpetuates the cycle and becomes the trafficker, because that's what they're so used to, that they'll continue the cycle. They'll graduate. In the Unification Church terms with human trafficking, you also age out, but to perpetuate the cycle, you usually get promoted to leadership, some type of leadership to keep you in the cycle and perpetuate recruiting members for labor demands or profits. It's a different form of human trafficking, but in this case, it seems like Aftab's mother aged out, and instead of going up the ladder in the chain of command to become a recruiter, she had a little too much autonomy for herself. She asked maybe a little too many questions, and so they got rid of her, is what I'm deducting here. This is definitely still on par with the system of human trafficking. I just wanted to interpret that for our listeners.
No, I have so many stories about that. And definitely my sister had to deal with that too. Like, literally, they would call you and tell you what you're doing wrong. And when I think about it, it was pretty tough. But sometimes you forget over time. Yeah, definitely. It's like they would act nice one moment, and the next moment you're like, oh, they're like, please don't come this time, because you're gonna influence this or that. And I think my sister and my mother especially dealt with it. They said one time they had to kind of have like a meeting with the guy, because my mom said she wanted to go to Japan one time, because she noticed everybody kind of got tickets to Japan in a sense. Yeah. So people will be like, I want to go to Japan. Can you provide that? And they would, he would. And then my mom's like, you know, I haven't gone to 20 years if I could have that privilege too, in a sense. And they're like, no, you guys don't deserve it. And it's fine, because at the same time, where's that money coming from? But there was definite, like, how you say, ranking, you could say. Like, there was definitely, like, we felt like we're a part of, like, a Yakuza. Like, it was just, like, so I think it took time after a few times that my mom finally decided, oh, this is, despite their Japanese, they're not being nice to me. And that's where we finally left. But definitely was very hurtful. Definitely it's where I realized my family has to do this, go on our own direction, I guess. And I was able to do that, to leave their group, but after I left even the main church, it hit even harder. I felt really lonely, definitely. Even though if they were mean to me, I felt like I almost like had to die and live my life again. It felt like I had to, it was basically like a year of me deleting all my friends on Facebook and like social media, thinking, who's really my friend?
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, let's take a break. You need to cry. Yeah. Let it out. I'm gonna pause it, and you need to cry and let that out. Okay. I understand the grieving process, and you lost your entire social group, your entire support system. You lost everything. And it was a very abusive group, but there was also the genuine relationships that you made. And that is a very complicated thing to grieve. So I love that you talked about it, that you could cry, because you're going to need to do a lot of that.
Yeah, definitely that's the case. And even some of them, I still like see them on social media or meet them. But I feel like our brain mentality is totally different now, that I can't be as close, basically. And I learned that it's okay to move on and find new friends, in a sense, because that was not the only world I needed to be in. I think it was like a Matrix moment, you could say. It was very like, did I want to stay in that kind of life, or did I really want to know the truth? And I think I still wanted to know the truth, because I felt like I was blind for the longest time. And there's still a lot of things in life that is like that, you know, nothing is exposed completely, but because of the honesty, my life became better, because I finally let go of that kind of past, moved on and figured out what I want to do in life, and understanding that the only person that know myself is myself, and that I know what I want to do in life, and listening to other people's suggestions wasn't the thing to do this whole time. Whether it's a member, whether it's anybody from school, it's, you have to make the decision. And I think that actually helped calm myself down, you could say, and look forward to, you know, the future. But definitely a lot of painful things has happened, and it only took until last year to finally quit. And so it's still fresh, in a sense, because I did enjoy taking care of kids, but I felt suffocated for the longest time because I couldn't do the things I actually really wanted to do. I still have, of course, plenty of things to work on, but the main, I guess, almost like there's a chain on me, like I just finally released that. It's just like, this is why I'm talking about it now, honestly, because there was a fear of still like something happening, but at the same time, I really don't want them to just be forgotten that this happened, you know. And I'm not the only one. I know like loyal other members that were part of the group were let go too, and they have a lot of resentment as well. And I never expected that for some of them. Many of them were the same situation. So, but they are very good at hiding it for sure.
The very insidious thing is that Mr. Fujita is running the New Hope Foundation International, which his main agenda is to raise awareness on human trafficking.
Yeah.
That's a legal organization.
Yeah.
But everything you talked about, what Mr. Fujita is doing, is the definition by the U.S. State of Health and Human Services, by their definition of human mm-hmm. trafficking, that is exactly what he's doing.
Yeah.
And it says they're bringing in missionaries from Japan.
Yeah. Yep.
I've
seen the photos. I've seen things. They don't even know that this is a church. Like, they come in thinking they're going to learn.
Okay, I'm going to stop there. We entered into a territory of grieving. And Aftab's story is uniquely her own, but there are aspects of her story that I think can resonate with a lot of survivors. So we've done a lot of emotional work to come this far. I want to give you permission to allow yourself to explore this level that we've reached. If you need to grieve and process, I'm giving you permission to do so. If you tapped into some trauma that needs to be shaken out, go ahead and do that. If you need to do some self-care, I encourage you. Do whatever you have to do to cope, to self-care, to shake out, and to get through this process. I'm going to release the bonus soon. It's going to take me a little bit because I'm still processing this at my own pace. I thank Aftab for bringing us here and doing this hard work of making the invisible visible. So as always, take care of yourself, take care of your mental. If you need to take a nap now, go ahead and do that. If you're do your hair, jog, reach out to a loved one, do whatever you have to do to regulate your nervous system before we jump into the bonus episode coming up soon. And if you're just binging it, go ahead and go to the next episode and enjoy. I'll see you there.